Good morning. Both sides hint at progress in talks to end the war with Iran. But as the Wall Street Journal tells us, lasting peace is far from certain.
Trump and the U.S. may have won the military aspect of the war with Iran, but right now they're on the battlefield of diplomacy, and Trump is not winning the peace. I think it's fair to say it.
Texas decides whether to fall behind Trump's pick for the Senate, and what we know and don't know about the controversial new DOJ fund. It's Tuesday, May 26th. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. The contours of an agreement to end the U.S.-Israeli conflict with Iran appear to be emerging. But a holiday weekend that began with positive updates has ended with more questions and plenty of skepticism. On Saturday, President Trump suggested an agreement had been, quote, largely negotiated.
In effect, he was announcing a deal to set up the talks.
That's Alex Ward, national security reporter at The Wall Street Journal.
So phase one would have been something like the Strait of Hormuz reopens and the U.S. lifts its blockade on Iran. Then they set the terms and it ultimately ends down the line with Iran having no ability to make a nuclear weapon.
But by Monday, the momentum had stalled. The Iranian Foreign Ministry acknowledged understanding on, quote, a large portion of the issues, but said a deal was not imminent.
It turns out that the president might have spoken too soon. In fact, the sides were not that close. There are many points of disagreement. One of them, as basic as Iran would like some money up front to continue talking, whereas the U.S. does not want to provide Iran with any sanctions relief. And it looks like Trump is trying to sell something that wasn't nearly complete.
According to the AP, officials say a draft deal includes an end to the war between Israel and Hezbollah and a commitment to avoid interfering in the domestic affairs of the region, taken to mean Iran's proxies. The Strait of Hormuz would gradually open up, and there would be sanctions relief in exchange for the regime giving up its uranium stockpile, to be negotiated over 60 days. But as those details dripped out, some Republican lawmakers were quick to warn against giving too much away. The Republican chair of the Senate's Armed Services Committee, Roger Wicker, suggested the rumored 60-day timeline would, quote, be a disaster. On Sunday, Secretary of State Marco Rubio sought to ease those concerns.
The idea that somehow this president, given everything he's already proven he's willing to do, is going to somehow agree to a deal that ultimately winds up putting Iran in a stronger position when it comes to nuclear ambitions is absurd.
Ward told us the toughest parts of a deal remain unresolved. In particular, Iran's ultimate nuclear ambitions, or exactly what happens to the Strait of Hormuz. And Trump surprised many yesterday when he suggested that more nations join the Abraham Accords, a treaty between a small number of countries to normalize relations with Israel. It was a flagship achievement of Trump's first term, and linking the accords to any Iran deal would please some within his own party.
So if all these countries were to sign on, it would signal greater integration of the Middle East, sort of less of at least official antagonism. But we're in a different world now, right? Gaza and Iran have happened. And there are a lot of countries that don't want to do that, namely Saudi Arabia, until there is sort of a clear pathway towards a Palestinian state and the issues in Gaza are resolved.
Talks are expected to intensify this week. Tehran's top officials arrived in Qatar on Monday for indirect negotiations. And for now, the ceasefire remains formally in place. But last night, U.S. Central Command also said it carried out what it called defensive strikes in southern Iran, targeting missile sites and boats that it said were attempting to place mines. Republican primary voters in Texas will decide today if they're going to stick with John Cornyn, who has held his Senate seat since 2002, or go with their Attorney General Ken Paxton. That choice could not only shape the future of the state, but also the makeup of the Republican Party in Congress going forward. That's because President Trump backed Paxton at the last minute.
The president has been on this decade-long project of making the Republican Party more to his liking.
Stephen Sloan is a Washington correspondent for the Associated Press.
Well, it's a real short-term, long-term kind of calculus that he's making here. In the long term, for a president who is trying to build a legacy, cement a legacy, this could be, in his mind, an upside.
The downside is that Republicans have slim margins in the House and Senate. And even as Trump has had success backing primary challengers against incumbents, those people still have months left of their terms, which they can use to be a thorn in the side of the administration. Or as Sloan called it, a kind of YOLO caucus. That philosophy of you only live once is coming into play more for these Republicans who feel like they have less to lose now.
We have like 7 months or so before this new Congress is sworn in, right? And there's a lot that has to happen in that time. And we saw this really kind of blow up in Washington last week.
Senators left town without passing a bill to fund immigration priorities because they were frustrated with the White House push to establish a new, quote, anti-weaponization DOJ fund, and also Trump's endorsement against Cornyn.
This is somebody who raises a lot of money for his Republican colleagues. He's somebody who's really liked among his colleagues. And for the president to come out against that, I think it really kind of pulled the rug out on a lot of stuff that's been festering for months.
Trump has recently said that Cornyn is, quote, very disloyal, in part because he had previously suggested that it'd be difficult for Trump to win in 2024. And stylistically, Paxton has appealed to Trump with his firebrand approach and support of false claims about the 2020 election. But in the final days of the campaign, Cornyn has emphasized his close work with the president and argued that he is the only candidate who could win in November.
And I know the attorney general thinks all the scandals that he's brought with him over the years are already baked in the cake and people don't care. But I guarantee you, I care, and I believe you care.
Paxton has been at the center of several controversies in recent years. He was impeached by the Texas House in 2023, though acquitted by the Senate, indicted on felony securities fraud charges, and he's in the middle of a bitter divorce, all of which Cornyn and his allies have used to suggest that the race could become a test of character. On Fox over the weekend, Paxton argued that Cornyn hadn't been sufficiently loyal to Trump.
He fought him in 2024, said it was his time had passed, and he fought him in 2016. So this is not a pro-Trump guy. I don't know if we could be more different on the Republican issues than John Cornyn and me. So there is a vast difference between the two of us.
If defeated, Cornyn could be tempted to join the growing list of lame duck Republicans already making an impact. Senator Bill Cassidy, who recently lost a primary, joined Democrats to vote to rein in Trump's war powers. And Kentucky Representative Thomas Massie, who lost last week, has hinted that he could throw some wrenches into Trump's agenda as well.
Maybe over the long term, this will work out to accomplish what the president wants, but the next few months are pretty hard.
President Trump's friends and foes alike have already begun eyeing up a part of the $1.8 billion so-called anti-weaponization fund. The money was set aside as part of Trump's settlement with the IRS, and it's designed for those who feel they were unfairly treated by the Justice Department. The Wall Street Journal reports that high-profile names have already started expressing their interest. Some are Trump allies, like MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, who lost defamation cases for spreading voter fraud conspiracies. Or Roger Stone, who Trump pardoned after being convicted for lying to Congress. Others, though, are names that Trump might not welcome.
People like Michael Cohen, the president's longtime former attorney and fixer, who was picked up in the Robert Mueller probe. He told us he's looking to get involved with this and make an application for it.
That's Brian Schwartz, a reporter at the Journal. Cohen is now a vocal critic of Trump, but he pled guilty in 2018 to a number of charges stemming from investigations into the president. And Schwartz told us that he's not the only Trump critic who might get involved. Protesters in Chicago, for one, who were targeted by the administration for prosecution and recently had their charges dropped. And then there's former FBI Director James Comey, who's been indicted twice by the DOJ since the start of Trump's second term. He was asked about the fund on CNN and initially said he thought it was a headline from The Onion.
It's to compensate people who've been targeted by the Justice Department for, they say, personal, political, or ideological reasons. So I'm guessing I'll be in line. I hope I'll be ahead of those who savagely beat police officers and sack the Capitol.
Schwartz said that the cases will be decided by a 5-member panel whose membership will be selected by Trump's Attorney General Todd Blanche and who Trump can fire without cause if he chooses. It's unclear for now who Blanche will appoint or exactly what the criteria would be to get access to the funds. The DOJ says the fund will be nonpartisan and that anyone can apply. And the money comes from a broader taxpayer pot that's been used to cover U.S. government legal settlements. But to use the money like this is unprecedented, and it drew a bipartisan firestorm on the Hill last week. Because Trump will have the power to remove members from the panel at will, it could be motivated to make decisions that appease him.
The president himself is clearly hinting that it is, in fact, the president's allies who are set to benefit more potentially from this fund and not necessarily Democrats as well.
Schwartz says a likely pool of applicants are people who faced legal charges related to the 2020 election. Enrique Tarrio, the former Proud Boys leader who was sentenced to 22 years for seditious conspiracy, told Reuters that he plans to apply. And Schwartz reports that many of the January 6 rioters who were charged or convicted, but later pardoned by Trump, for their roles in the insurrection, are talking with lawyers about applying as well.
There's no rule stopping people who assaulted police officers that day and were convicted of that from submitting for funds.
Blanche told lawmakers that he plans to appoint the panel that will judge the applications within the next month. The fund already faces several challenges in federal court, and both Democrats and some Republicans are questioning its legality. Last week, lawmakers in the House introduced a bipartisan bill to prohibit the fund drawing from taxpayer dollars. And finally, here are a few other stories we're following. The risk of a major chemical tank explosion that prompted mass evacuation orders in Southern California has passed. But the danger is not over yet. Officials said the threat of a smaller-scale explosion remains. Last week, inspectors discovered a crack in a 34,000-gallon tank that was storing chemicals used in the production of plastics and resins. Governor Newsom declared a state of emergency as fears grew of devastating contamination at a facility about 30 miles from Los Angeles. But while firefighters have managed to cool the temperature down and to lessen the risk, officials warned that evacuation orders were still in place. At the Vatican, Pope Leo weighed in on one of the defining technologies of the moment yesterday.
Let's not fear artificial intelligence, but constantly keep the question of the human in play. We cannot be careless with our most powerful technical instruments.
It was part of his first papal encyclical, a 42,000-word open letter that he presented alongside Chris Ola, a co-founder of Anthropic. AI is one of the first issues the pontiff spoke about after being elected, saying it's the biggest challenge facing humanity today. In this letter, he framed AI as a new industrial revolution, said that it should be removed from military and economic interests, and that concentrating the power of AI in the hands of a few big tech leaders could have negative consequences. Pope Leo also used the encyclical to apologize for the Vatican's past role in legitimizing slavery, saying it was, quote, a wound in Christian memory. And as airline prices fly ever higher, one viral video claimed to have the answer, the public library. According to the video, computers at your local branch are a blank slate. They're free of your search history and cookies that many believe affect the price that you see. The video also claims that airlines can determine your fare in a predatory manner. But the Washington Post tried to see if that was the case, and they tested the theory out. The short answer they found was a resounding no. The Post's Natalie Compton searched for the same flights on her personal devices, like phones and laptops, then went to the library to try it.
We looked directly on the airline websites and through their apps. I even went back to a different library on a second day to repeat the test again. And we all got the same results. If a fare fluctuated, it fluctuated for all of us and not just on a particular device. This was disappointing. We wanted the hack to work, but it didn't. Those viral videos...
Airfare experts also told the Post that they were skeptical and that airlines are constantly updating fares in real time to account for demand and how many tickets are left, no matter if you're at the library or at home. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening to the news app right now, we have a narrated article coming up next. Rolling Stone reports on Colossal Biosciences, the company that claims it can de-extinct animals. It's had successes like resurrecting direwolves, and now it's hoping to create artificial wombs. If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.